A number of events are taking place over the next few weeks to mark the 50th anniversary of the so-called Gentle Revolution. It occurred at the old UCD campus on Earlsford Terrace, which is now the National Concert Hall. The campus was overcrowded and students were being moved out to a new site at Belfield. But when they heard that there would be no library in the new college, they decided to take action. Regan Hutchins went to the National Concert Hall to meet Basil Miller. He was one of a group who took radical steps to make sure the student's voice was heard. And in this piece, he takes a walk down memory lane.
In the middle of last week, a mass meeting of students from University College Dublin decided not to attend lectures for 2 days, but instead to meet in groups to discuss their studies and their life in the university and the relationship of the university with the rest of the community.
We're standing in the corridor in UCD Earlsford Terrace, occupied since yesterday. We're in full control. We've taken control of the president's office, the registrar's office, the secretary's office, the general office.
Now, you've got a photograph here.
And this is me in my role at the time as auditor of the Political Studies Society.
And you are sitting there among lots of different posters and
yes,
things stuck on the wall.
The Vietnam War being prominent there, left-wing publications at the time, and we've the covers of many of the books which influenced us at the time, including some of James Connolly's writings, Karl Marx, of course. Why did we occupy? Why did we barricade ourselves in here? The building had a capacity, or was built, to hold 4,000 students. And there were actually about 8,000 located at Earlsford Terrace. It was actually quite appalling. People were studying in corridors. If you wanted to get a book out of the library, you had to join a queue. Moving between lectures even was a chore.
Some of the students merely want practical changes, improvements in facilities. Others want to change the world overnight.
Why were students worried about moving to Belfield? It would seem like a wonderful opportunity, a bigger campus, you know, more facilities.
That's true, but the real problem with it was it became known that there would not be a library. There would be a temporary library so that one could be waiting for a long time to actually get a book, which had to be retrieved from here in Earlsford Terrace. And I think when that became known, it first of all shocked people, and secondly, it enraged them.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, my purpose this evening is to try and analyse the present situation of unrest in the university.
In May 1968, towards the end of May 1968, a group was set up called SDA, Students for Democratic Action. The college officers basically failed to answer questions which were put to them. We were looking really for a kind of participatory democracy in the college to run the college.
I am a member of SDA. I was one of those occupying last week.
But you also installed yourselves as interim governors of the college.
Brother students, I was a member of the occupiers last week.
Well, yes, that was a tactic which didn't really mean much, but it made for a certain sense of theatricality and perhaps a bit of good publicity. We had declared ourselves to be the governing body and proclaimed that the new governing body would have enormous representation of both students and junior staff.
In 1968, when you set up that group, the world was on fire with Vietnam, civil rights issues, there was the crushed Prague Spring. But there were also issues much closer to home that you were engaged with. What were they?
Here in Ireland, the civil rights movement in the north was beginning to emerge and make its points. There was very widespread militancy among workers. And then, as now, there was a homelessness crisis. There was a very large campaign going on in Dublin, basically looking for solutions to lack of public housing, lack of social housing, just as we see today.
I feel that there is a splendid vigour and positive approach in the sincerity with which these students are attacking problems. I feel that this is going to affect the whole of Irish society in a wonderful way if we can stand behind these students.
The campus at Earlsford Terrace closed. Students were relocated to Belfield. You got libraries, facilities out there. Is there a longer legacy from those days of occupation in this corridor here?
There is a longer legacy in this sense. I see SDA, when I look back, as one piece of a jigsaw of many elements seeking change. We feel we were part of a breach in the wall of silence in Irish society at the time, and that in itself unleashed forces which changed Ireland irrevocably since then.
Regan Hutchins reporting there, talking to Basil Miller about the student protests at University College Dublin, which began in late February 1969. You also heard voices there from the RTE archives, voices from a report on the protests on the TV programme 7 Days. And I'm joined in studio by Una Claffey, former RTE political reporter who was a student at UCD in 1969, and along with Basil Miller was one of the founders of the SDA, the Students for Democratic Action. You're very welcome indeed, Una, to the History Show.
Thanks, Matt.
And it was sparked off by, which was more important? The prospect of not having a library or overcrowding in Earlsford Terrace? Because, I mean, Basil Miller talked about 8,000 people being squashed into a facility which was for 4,000 people.
It was a ferment. And there were so many strands to it. And it was inspired by so many things within the college and outside the college that it's hard to narrow it down to two issues and say either or. I mean, the architects had occupied the School of Architecture a few months prior, and that was about a very specific issue. The Royal Institute of British Architects had threatened to take away recognition of their degrees because of a decline in academic standards in UCD. That was crucial for architectural students because they couldn't work without that recognition. So their occupation was focused entirely on that, on improving the standards in their school. But for us, I mean, one of the things that was interesting about the SDA was that it was totally unhierarchical, that it was above all politics. I mean, people from the political parties were involved in it. Rory Quinn, Basil Miller, myself, we were all involved in the university's branch of the Labour Party at the time. But it was very unsectarian. Mm. So
it sounds a bit Occupy. It sounds a little bit like the Occupy movement in some senses, in the sense that it didn't have one particular leader.
Oh, no, it didn't have one particular leader. And that was one of the great things about it, because an awful lot of students got very enriching personal experiences out of that and about being able to challenge authority. But there's no doubt but that the move to Belfield was what finally sparked it off. And, you know, the Students for Democratic Action, we weren't a membership organisation per se. We were just a mass movement, if you like. But the mass was rather small. So if there hadn't been an actual issue which affected students in terms of their everyday lives, certainly the occupation wouldn't have happened. And I don't think the SDA would have had the kinds of successes that it did.
And you would have been aware of people like Tom Hayden in the USA, Rudy Dutschke in Europe, but you didn't go down that route because they essentially took on the mantle of, or at least in retrospect, we think of them as having taken on the mantle of leadership of student movements in Europe and in the US.
Well, they were well-known figures in those those student movements. But the SDS, I mean, ironically, both the movement in Germany and the movement in the United States was called SDS. Mm. But they were also mass movements. And I mean, the leaders, if you like, became leaders more or less through media attention. But certainly, I mean, that was one of the things, Miles, that was very exciting about it, was the fact that, you know, you were challenging very, very authoritarian aspect of Irish society, which was the institution of UCD. And you, Ireland itself was a deeply conservative place. But there was a lot going on beneath the surface. I mean, there was a movement, for example, to abolish corporal punishment in schools in Ireland, which had nothing to do with the university. Contraception was illegal. Obviously, divorce and abortion were illegal. There were a lot of things going on, as well as literary censorship, as well as all that repression of the Catholic Church. Although we didn't know the extent of it.
One of the other things that Basil Miller mentioned as well was, I think, something that you were involved in, and that was the housing crisis of the time. And that was something that was also of more than passing interest to the kind of students and to the very students who were involved in the Students for a Democratic Action protest.
Well, there was the Dublin Housing Action Committee. You may not remember, but a number of people were killed when tenements collapsed in Dublin in 1963. There were two people killed in Bolton Street, and there were two young children, two girls, in Fenian Street. And the housing situation was dire. So that was another form of activity that was going on. And I was involved in that, certainly. But so were quite a number of students from the SDA. I mean, the likes of John Feeney, Basil Miller. And then, of course, there was the Vietnam War. And, I mean, Basil and I, for example, were on the big Vietnam demonstration in London in Grosvenor Square,
which was 68, wasn't it?
And Basil and I, with the late Owen Sweeney and John Cahill, were part of the Burntollet March from
Derry. Haven't talked about so far is the people's democracy and the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland, because that had already kicked off as well, and that must have been influential.
That was, and that march was in January 69, as far as I recall. About 100 of us set off from Belfast, opposed, by the way, by the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association, because they felt it was too provocative, because we were marching from Belfast to Derry. And I've often asked myself that question since. It was, of course, viciously and famously attacked by Paisleyites at Burntollet Bridge, with the connivance of some members of the RUC, it must be said.
And graphically filmed by RTE cameraman.
By RTE's great cameraman, Gay O'Brien, who actually gave me a lift home. I don't know, we hitched there. Basil and I hitched together, and the other two, I think, hitched separately. But when I got... Gay O'Brien gave me a lift to RTE, and I then got into a taxi to go home to my parents' home. And the
taximan, where you would end up.
The taximan asked me, what the hell did I think I was doing? It was none of my business. So that's often my cough somewhat.
One of the voices that we heard on the report there, somebody that I think we both have known well or knew well over the years, when she published, she was Margaret McCurtain, but to anybody who went to UCD and did history, she was Sister Ben.
Sister Benvenuta McCurtain is a wonderful woman. She lectured in history in her Dominican habit.
Yeah, she'd stopped doing that when I was there.
She was still doing it when I was there. And she was she certainly was part of that radical strain of the Dominicans. She was wonderfully supportive. I found her personally incredibly supportive, and I felt very lucky to be doing history, because by and large it was a fairly progressive department. Yes, I think that clip that you have was from Seven Days. But a very fine woman and a very fine historian, and totally supportive of students, and somebody who, you know, was more than happy to talk to students. I remember when I finally graduated with a pass BA, saying to her, you know, I really should have done better and all this sort of stuff, because both Basil Miller and Kevin Myers, another leading activist, both got first class honours in their degrees in spite of being involved in all this carry on. I remember her saying to me, ah, yes, Una, But what'll that matter in years to come? But your experiences here will be always remembered, and so they are.
Wonderful exhibition or example of the paternalism of the 1960s. Apparently there was a ban on female students wearing trousers.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I wore trousers on one occasion when the ban was still there. More for convenience, I have to say, than as a demonstration of radical politics. I was going to a rugby colours match between UCD and Trinity, so it was a Saturday morning when I went in. Nobody paid a blind bit of notice. But there was a day set apart when we female students all wore trousers. Now, I think the college actually was quite intelligent in many respects in terms of how it responded to the gentle revolution. And I mean, they didn't come the heavy in terms of the jeans, the band just disappeared.
They could have come the heavy. I mean, just listening again to Basil Miller talking about occupying the president's office and the registrar's office. Mm. I mean, one thinks of similar demonstrations in New York and Columbia University, which were broken up. Heavy-handedly.
By the New York police.
By the police.
Yeah, yeah.
So it never came to that.
It never came to that. And in fact, I was talking to Basil the other day and I said to him, I wonder, is UCD subject to the Freedom of Information Act? Because it would be very interesting to get, I mean, there have been various works published by academics in the college, but it would be very interesting to get the minutes of the Academic Council and the governing body meetings in which our activities were discussed and who took what position in relation to how to handle it. Because the fact that they just let the events go ahead, I mean, there was a strike for virtually 10 days with constant teach-ins and all of that. It did kind of take some of the wind out of the sails. You know, we didn't have a position where we could claim university brutality or police brutality, all of which are very useful charges to be able to make in situations like that. But
a few
that was denied
split heads
us.
Would have gone down well, you mean?
Well, maybe not quite. But I do remember very early on, Basil and Rory Quinn and myself organised a demonstration to Trinity in response to a police attack on a march organised in Trinity against a visit of the King and Queen of the Belgians because of the imperial past of Belgium. And we three organised, the police did deal quite harshly with that, but we three decided that we should have a march to Trinity in solidarity with the Trinity students, because there was a lot of crossover between the two colleges at that point. And I remember Garrett Fitzgerald, a much younger Garrett Fitzgerald, coming to me and saying, "Why didn't you sign the paper?" And it was a very good lesson in...
What was the paper?
Well, the paper was the flyer that we printed off a Gestetner machine in the Labour Party head office across the street. They had their office in Earlsford Terrace at the time, calling on students to go down to march to Trinity in support of the Trinity students. And it taught me a good lesson that if you have something to say, stand behind it and put your name to it. What he didn't object to the march.
Yeah, just to the fact that you didn't sign. Mm. What did it all achieve?
Well, I suppose the most obvious immediate effect was the establishment of a proper Students' Representative Council with Eddie O'Connor as its first paid president. He'd been serving as president. And a lot of that was very influential in terms of developing the student movement into the Union of Students of Ireland. So in that sense, that was important. What else did it achieve? You know, these historical questions, looking back in hindsight, what precisely did it achieve?
A lot of great memories.
Points 1, 2, 3 on your exam paper don't necessarily apply. But what it did achieve, I think, for a lot of us was a lot of very good memories, but also a sense of engagement in society, a sense of being concerned about issues beyond our own personal welfare, a sense of comradeship, a sense of solidarity, a sense of the fact that we weren't just irrelevant little people, that we could attempt to take some control of our lives.
What do you think now when you see not students, not university students in the main, but secondary school students all over Europe on the streets protesting about the most important issue which confronts us and which faces us, not Brexit, not Donald Trump, but climate change?
Yeah, I've been thinking about that because certainly when I was a secondary school student, it would never have occurred to me to go out in the streets and protest out of school, even though I came from a very strong trade union family. But
stuff like this, that we're talking about, to some extent creates or has created a template, if you like, which allows those students to say, okay, they were doing it at 18 or 19, you know, 50 years ago. We can do it at 16 or 17.
Well, I think secondary school students now are a very, very different bunch to when we were secondary school students. I mean, they're much more mature, they're much more advanced in years, and they're getting a lot of this in school. I mean, their teachers are talking about climate change, and rightly so. And I suppose, I mean, I've seen them being interviewed in England, and they're very articulate, bright young people. A lot of them young women, I'm delighted to see.
Same in America with the gun issue.
Yes. Although that was so... Yeah, that was caused by such a direct attack on some of those students. But, you know, it does make sense. I mean, the only reservation I would have about that is not about the fact that they are protesting, but that, you know, whatever you end up with at the end of your secondary school really is your passport to the rest of your life. And if you don't get a leaving cert or whatever, your chances of getting into third level are virtually nil.
There speaks somebody who has just reminded us that you got a pass BA.
Indeed.
Yeah. There you go.
But I did graduate.
You did graduate, indeed. And you made a bit of a success of what happened afterwards as well, Una.
Well, thank you
very much for joining us on the History Show this evening and telling us about those memories of the Gentle Revolution in 1969. And as I mentioned, there are a number of events taking place to mark the 50th anniversary. This Thursday at 8 p.m. in UCD, there's an event called Characters in Conversation, where activists from the period will talk about the spirit of protest and desire for social change that most motivated them at the time. Also, a concert to commemorate the Gentle Revolution. That'll be taking place in the John Field Room at the National Concert Hall on Tuesday, the 12th of March. All proceeds will go to the Peter McVerry Trust. Tickets are €20, excuse me. I'm just bringing me back to the 1969. Can be purchased from the National Concert Hall box office. And we'll put details of those events on our own website, rte.ie/history.